Yes, folks. Postgame 100.
Hell yeah. Thanks, everybody, so much. Again, I know we've said it before, but do appreciate this community very much. And it's nice to hit those milestones.
It is nice. And without further ado, let's welcome our illustrious guest for Postgame 100, Mr. RM Brown. RM, welcome to the stream.
Hey, thanks for having me on your show, guys. Appreciate it.
No, we're thrilled for it. And I have a special welcome for you. A little musical number to get us a little warmed up by our good friend Ben Shapiro.
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, wow.
Oklahoma, where the wind goes whistling down the plain. Oklahoma, where the waving wheat, it sure smells sweet when the wind comes right behind the rain. Oklahoma, every night, my honey lamb and I, every night we sit alone and talk and watch the hawks making lazy circles in the sky.
All right, that's enough of that.
He's the most—he's the most lib guy ever. Like, I mean, his whole brand is hating that. Like, he loves that stuff. Like, lib culture, he just guzzles it down. You know,
it's interesting to think of like what like Hollywood producer that did have his dreams come true would have been a Ben Shapiro if like those breaks never happened for him. As opposed to how Shapiro would have been. I we have to cleanse the palate though, so I have a different musical number. A little guy. There's a little bit of a political music by a guy you might know by the name of Pitbull.
Oh, hell yeah. Bush tore the country apart. Oh, shit.
Now let's talk facts. All they want is oil in Iraq. Attention. We got Saddam, but no Bin Laden. Looks like he's fighting the war for his daddy. Osama's people, Bush's people, them motherfuckers like family. Attention. Terrorist this, terrorist that. The real terrorist in the White House. Facts. First they rob the election, they get in power, then boom, they go to town.
Damn.
Whoa, damn.
There's
okay.
Some politics up in here, man.
Damn. Okay.
Politics. Mr. Worldwide.
They need to get him on Truanon. Get Mr. 305 on Truanon. Damn. Is that from the early 2000s or what?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think 2003. Yeah.
Okay. That'd be awesome actually to drop in like 2015. Just
like, he puts that back on the set list.
Iraq War.
Yeah. He just found out about how bad George W. Bush is.
Yeah. He remembers all the lyrics perfectly for like the New Year's Eve party on the ABC. It's like. Boom goes the towers.
Boom goes the towers. I wonder if he has a loose change lyric in there somewhere. That might be interesting.
I don't know. I got to see that whole full song. That was very – the American Boy, the beat, I guess, is pretty undefeated. But
yeah, that's true.
Well, yeah, guys, okay. Should we let's start with calls. We have some calls. Hold your calls if you haven't called in yet because we got a jam-packed show and I don't want to have to run through all this. But let's start with this call. Wait, why am I confused? Oh, right here.
Howdy, Matt and David. It is Kowalski from Nebraska. Wanted to congratulate you on your 100th episode. I can't believe it has been that many episodes. I recall putting up a fence on a very cold November or December day when you guys went live for the first time. I don't think you counted that as the officially first episode, but you know, that's when this whole thing got rolling, and I'm glad I've been here since basically the start. You guys have really kept up, I think, a lot of that energy from TMBS and have really found like a unique space on the online left. Now to go on a little bit of a tangent, trains. So today I watched a decent video by Wendover Productions. I put a link in the Discord for you guys to check out. I think it's a decent watch if you have the time for it. Who doesn't like to learn about trains?
Hell yeah.
But something that kind of piqued my interest on it, and I reached out to a buddy of mine who worked for Union Pacific, and basically his idea of making the trains better in the United States, and this would actually make a lot more sense if you watch the video, why doesn't the government just nationalize the railroad tracks? Mm-hmm. Like, obviously there'd be a lot of pushback from, like, the companies if you nationalize the companies themselves, but functionally speaking, if you just treated the railroad tracks like we do the Mississippi boat access or airline corridors or the interstate, it would probably solve a lot of the issues. I didn't realize exactly how bad railroad infrastructure is, but it is honestly a ticking time bomb. Just thought I would put that out to you guys, see what you think on that. And I am very much looking forward to your live show. I still can't believe it only cost $300 to go from Omaha to New York round trip.
Wow.
Truly incredible. But you guys,
sorry, I have to pause it. I mean, I'm not getting to North Dakota for those rates, but cool.
You guys have a good one. And once again, congratulations on the 100th episode. Left is best.
That's an interesting point. In 1870s, the Northern Pacific Railroad was given the largest land grant in American history from the United States government to build a train from Duluth across the upper states to the West Coast. The Northern Pacific Railroad became Burlington Northern Santa Fe through some mergers, and that is the number one private property holder in the country to this day. So okay. Yes, we should just take that back.
Well, we did in World War One. Woodrow Wilson nationalized the train system and modernized a lot of it, and in a couple years' time, before, of course, returning it back to all their private owners.
Interesting.
But yeah, it's certainly something that makes a lot of sense. But like the thing about the rail companies is like, even though it seems like it's an out of fashion like industry, like they're still really fucking powerful. I mean, we saw that, you know, a couple months ago with the rail strike. Like they're an extremely powerful political bloc. But I totally agree that we should be taking that under public control for sure, because there's a direct need for it, not only just for like the hope of public transportation kind of systems, but that's how like almost all the shit that we consume and use in this country is brought around. And, you know, the train system, I mean, some of our listeners I know could probably explain this better, but like even like logistics in this country are insane. Yeah. Because of the need to make profit, because they're shipping things across the country to then go back across the country because they want to hit this warehouse or that warehouse because, you know, they're getting paid, you know, via weight and how much they're shipping. So there's a lot of grift and graft in there. Yeah, hell yeah. And bring the spirit of John Brown with you, Kowalski, when you come to the air.
I feel spoiled here in, because I've always been interested in trains, I guess. You know, I took a train from Fargo to Seattle spring break once, 72 hours on a train over the course of that break. But on the East Coast, I feel really like relatively like this is very nice to be able to just get a train to Baltimore and see a whole new city. And it's a shame that like you couldn't just do that, like take a train from Bismarck to Minneapolis. I would have gone to so many concerts. It would have been crazy.
Sounds like fun too. You just hop on a train, you know?
Yeah.
You kind of
have you guys
out.
Taken any big train journeys?
No. I wish. It sounds fun actually.
It's awesome.
I did it sometime as a kid, like a long one, but I can't remember where I went or what it was. But, you know, the thing, I mean, it's insane that Texas doesn't have like better, you know, a better train system when you think that like the vast majority of the population lives in the Texas Triangle, like Austin, Dallas, Houston.
Yeah.
And, you know, one interesting little thing that I was reading about, so fucked, and we didn't even cover this story, but everyone, of course, knows the Southwest debacle over the Christmas break. Apparently Southwest Airlines played a huge role in lobbying against a pretty promising train program in the state of Texas to create that kind of super track between the three cities. Because again, like, you know, Southwest is now it's more national, but it used to be a very regional airline. And like, that's how they made their money. It was Dallas to Austin, Dallas to Houston flights.
Right. Of course. Yeah.
It's so nasty.
Unbelievable.
That, not only did they
it's surprising though, because I would have put my money on the automobiles giants, but it's like everybody just colluding to fuck us over.
Everyone's colluding to fuck the rail. I mean, it's nuts. I mean, and like at this point, like they're trying, they've been trying to do a private company one here for a while.
Ooh, exciting.
But you know, I think you have to do those government run because it's like a public service. And even if it loses a little bit of money here and there, you know, keep it within budget, within reason. But, yeah, super, super nuts. Before we get to this next call, I want to make sure we're including our chat questions and stuff too. Daniel's trying to get us in trouble by asking Left Reckoning not to stir up drama, but what's y'all's impression of Thomas Frank and his work? I'm not quite so sure what to make of him.
I mean, I'll be honest, I haven't actually read What's the Matter with Kansas. I know it made a big splash. I mean, what? Frank's an interesting podcast guest, but I haven't. And, you know, I did read his book that came People out know. In the primary of ahead of 2016. That was good.
The People Know is a good book. And like, What's the Matter with Kansas is like one of those books that like everyone quotes. Mm-hmm. They quote the title.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, What's the Matter with Kansas? It's like, well, if you read the book, like the argument here is that the Democratic Party betrayed like the interest of working people. So the Republicans were able to fill in the void, not what everyone always tries to make it out to be like, these guys are so stupid.
So dumb.
They're voting against their interests.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't, as in regards to like, if he's been going on and saying certain things on shows or in recent pieces, I haven't kept up with that. I mainly know his written stuff and stuff at the Baffler, but
yeah, I read Listen Liberal. And I think probably a long time ago, I read, What's the Matter with Kansas? And it all seems pretty, you know, straightforward. You know, I think he gets it. You know, there might be little things we disagree with him on, but I think generally he gets
Honestly,
yeah, it's not a Marxist, but like a good like lefty.
We should actually get him on to talk about the Populist Party in Kansas, Matt. That'd be a great episode. So
yeah,
happy to do it. But we want to get.
Yeah, that was good. I did have back in the my, man 2000. There's certain books that can really take me back to Bernie Hillary.
Yeah. Oh man, I mean, it's so funny. Like now being. It being 2023 and like even just remembering the kind of like fights we were having during the first Bernie run and like the unity on the left during that period of time. Like,
oh, yeah.
you know, all these people have gone different ways. Like there's a moment where everybody, we're all just like on each other's side and encouraging each other. I don't know. It's a shame we don't have that anymore.
Do you not call?
Yeah. Let's do these calls up top.
All right.
Jamaica, congratulations. Hey guys, Dave from Jamaica. Congratulations on your century or 100 episodes. Always good to hear from Brian Mayer, even though he short-circuited my brain when I heard Brazilians get a month off. So that one kind of got me on a loop because all we get is 10 days, but you know. But anyway, enough of that complaining. As usual, I find all your segments interesting. And Brian highlighting the particularities of Brazilian politics is always interesting. Even though I do see the Brazilian right tries to suck up to the American right, I do find it a very interesting country where you have very, very, very right wingers, but it seems they have very left leaning folks too. I mean, very left leaning. I found that particularly educating. Not sure how Glenn manages to live down there with their version of speech laws, but you know. No poking the beehive there. So glad to see you guys hit 100 and keenly listening for what more you can teach me.
Oh, thank you very much, Dave. Well,
appreciate that. Yeah, I will say I'm not the biggest fan of some of these more strict rules internationally.
Yeah, that's the developments of the, you know, we're going to roll up you Nazis. Like, for me, it's like Janine Inez, lock her up, baby. Like, yeah. Lock them up. Like, but I do, like, it does worry me when, like, the guy's in flip-flops. Like, I'm not saying, like, I like those guys, but I'm just saying, like, that's not... I'm just going to watch, though, as I'll say. We'll be watching and, you know, ready to respond and see how that goes. One final call this evening from our pal Joe Snuffy.
Congrats on the show turning 100. Hey, everyone. It's Joe Snuffy. Congrats on the show turning 100. It's been a fun and fascinating journey to get here, and I hope that you have at least another 100 in you. So some folks in the Discord were curious about the situation in Rhode Island where Providence DSA is moving towards unendorsing David Morales, one of our sitting state reps. And as it's been a frequently discussed topic on the show, I want to add some context that the Boston Globe article on this left out. This past fall, our chapter voted to add the following to our bylaws. It is the responsibility of Providence DSA's membership to uphold the democratic decisions of the chapter and ensure our organization does not support politicians who fail to meet our minimum requirements. Among these democratically decided requirements is this. DSA-endorsed politicians are expected to play an oppositional role in the political system. They should not support establishment Democrats for the purpose of gaining the party of party leader or favor of party leadership. Last spring, we also passed a resolution regarding the conditions under which Providence DSA would work in formal coalition with non-DSA politicians, and one of the requirements was that any politician seeking an alliance must refuse to work for extremely corrupt and far-right Democratic Party leadership for leadership positions in the General Assembly. Remember that despite being super dominated by the Democratic Party, Rhode Island has an extremely conservative, reactionary Democratic Party machine. DSA member spoke with David Morales many times about our expectations, and David initially abstained during the November Democratic Caucus vote. On January 3rd, he reversed his decision and voted to reelect Joe Shikarchi as House Speaker without consulting Providence DSA. Joe Shikarchi, an eviction lawyer whose top aide recently resigned after a police investigation revealed the aide's ties to the mob, was the right-hand man of the previous right-wing speaker, Nicholas Mattiello, who was unseated in 2020 after a huge corruption scandal. The Democratic Party in Rhode Island uses the leadership vote as a disciplinary mechanism by threatening to block bills sponsored by legislators who abstain, exclude dissenters from committees, and run challenges against them in elections, while promising to protect those legislators who do not fight the corrupt party machine. Prior to this year's leadership vote, David Morales already indicated he was willing to break with our political project when he refused to support fellow socialist Enrique Sanchez during the primary election, which David said was because of an agreement with colleagues at the State House to stay out of the race. This is a good test case for the sort of transition you guys have advocated DSA undergo many times. We are moving to officially rescind our endorsement of Morales using the procedures democratically developed. This isn't an emotionally charged or impulsive decision, and it's not being rushed. Interestingly enough, there has been some mainstream reporting on the subject, and so far the narrative being pushed is that DSA is rationally accusing him of selling out, and that we are overreacting because he really was just making a noble sacrifice in order to deliver for his constituents, yada, yada. So, yeah, thought you guys would find it interesting to hear about. Sorry for the long call. And, yeah, everybody have a good night. Oh, and see you in 2 weeks. All right, bye.
See you, Joe.
Nice. Whoa. Yeah, I mean, I haven't been able to keep up with that, but sounds interesting. I mean, you know, it's the kind of stuff that I think we, you know, having more accountability with elected officials, I think is something we've all been sort of pushing for a while. So interesting to see how it turns out.
It'd be interesting to hear more about local politics like that, too. I mean, I don't know what, you know, we could do to help, but like some sordid stuff going on in there. An eviction lawyer tied to the mob. Holy moly. Some wild stuff going on in Rhode Island.
Wow. I mean, Rhode Island's like a fascinating state from what I understand.
Really? There's a lot of that going on. Holy moly.
Yeah. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, Joe's not on the line, but like they have a lot of politicians for like the size of the state. So it creates more opportunities for there to be characters.
You got to get Joe on. We got to get more info on this.
Yeah, I've been to Rhode Island once. Got a flat tire there.
My grandfather retired, and that's where he ended up.
Interesting.
Yeah, in Providence.
Should we do our Musk?
Let's do some Musk.
You know, can I say somebody in the chat asked, our man's reading the Tarantino book? I do have the Tarantino book.
Oh, hell yeah.
To answer that guy. I don't know if it's good or not. It's called Cinema Speculation, and I guess it's just Tarantino.
Are you a big Tarantino fan?
You know, I'm like, you know, I like him. I like him. I think I like his appreciation of film more than I like him as a filmmaker. Mm. I thought his last one was okay. You know, I mean, I'm hit or miss. What about you guys?
I've come off two good Tarantino experiences. I saw Jackie Brown for the first time, which is maybe my favorite movie by him now.
It's good.
I like him typically. Like I don't like Reservoir Dogs. That almost turned me off. And when I watch it, don't really get it. But I also watched Hateful Eight on Shrooms, and that was fucking awesome. I really enjoyed myself there.
Yeah, that sounds like a fun experience. What can I just ask? I don't, not to slow down the show, but what did you like about Jackie Brown? Because for one, what I remember, I like it, and I would put it at the top too. But like when it came out, me and a friend of mine who really liked Tarantino at the time went to see it, and I remember like when it first came out, Tarantino was really like upset with it. Like he didn't like it. He thought it was a failure or whatever. I think he likes it now, but and I like it. But what did you like? What did you get out of it?
I mean, I remember Pam Grier, the lead, was awesome.
Oh, she's so good.
She was amazing.
That's mainly what I remember, and the ending being very satisfying.
The music was really, like, the music choices were excellent.
Across 110th Street and all those, like...
Right, really, yeah, that shit's so good.
It's really good, yeah.
I think that's probably my favorite too, Matt, if I'm being honest.
I should rewatch it, honestly. It's been a while.
It's definitely up there, and I always forget that Robert De Niro is in it, playing a very, you know, kind of a secondary character, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. I guess I've seen Inglourious Basterds. Inglourious Basterds was pretty good too. I enjoyed that. I generally like Tarantino.
Ben's in the chat, by the way, and he says he's going to have to argue with you, Matt, about Reservoir Dogs when we're in New York City. And I probably won't be very influential, but I'll spiritually back you up on that, Matt.
And that was the first one I watched. And you know, this is kind of to Ben's, this is ammunition for Ben, but I watched it. I torrented it and watched it on my iPod video.
It had like hard printed Korean subtitles.
Yeah, exactly. And it was like 25 megabytes.
I had a friend, my experience with Reservoir, I must've been 15 or something like that. I went to summer camp and I had a couple friends come and visit me in South Carolina after it. And one of them was obsessed. Like we were going to church on Sunday and like was obsessed with us all wearing the fucking suits together, which I was just like, bro, like this is so goofy. I'm not doing that. Like one, we're going to church, which is like not like badass or anything. And two, I'm not showing up dressed up as fucking Reservoir Dogs with you.
Oh my God.
Always. So like, not a film criticism, but like the association is sort of forever in my mind. We're just cringe.
That's definitely a young boy thing. Like we're going to imitate this movie, but at church, you know?
Yeah. And just like the way media impressed you back then, because you didn't have the internet to sort of bounce it off of. It's like these sort of like Reservoir Dogs, especially, I felt like had a reputation of like, it's like a lifestyle and a movie you're renting at the same time.
Absolutely. Like Tarantino just like completely took over culture. I remember there's a reference to Pulp Fiction, I think, in the first Space Jam movie. Like it's just swept across culture. It's really crazy.
I mean, and Jay asks like, what about Kill Bill and Django? I mean, Kill Bill's great. I will say,
I don't like Kill Bill.
After having seen really Lady like Snowblood,
good classic,
which is an excellent Japanese, I don't know how you call it, hack and slash like murder. I mean, it's like in samurai times, but I think Snowblood's better. And I don't think Tarantino is necessarily even trying to beat that. He references it a few times in the movie. I thought Django was pretty good. I mean, it's been a long time. I mean, when Django came out, that was a long time ago. So I'd have to like rewatch it to have like a real strong opinion. I feel like there was some stuff that was a little egregious. But I, you know, generally watching a slave master get like brutalized is like a good film.
Yeah, that's something that Tarantino, you know, he'll really like dig into stuff like that.
Well, should we do car talk?
Let's do car talk. So Ken Klippenstein had a new piece of news for all of us over at The Intercept. It was this piece of surveillance footage of I obtained surveillance footage of the self-driving Tesla that abruptly stopped on the Bay Bridge, resulting in an 8-vehicle crash that injured 9 people, including a 2-year-old child, just hours after Musk announced the self-driving feature. Let's watch this thing. This abomination that, you know, those folks who are like, if we don't enforce the border, we don't have a country.
Yeah.
I'm that guy, but if we don't get this shit off of our roads, we don't have a country anymore.
Yeah, I agree.
So we can see just a bunch of normal cars being driven by their human operators across the bridge.
So far, so good.
Some you've seen 1,000 times. And then a Tesla just stops right in the middle.
Yeah, it's hard to see, but if you look at the top, you know.
There we go.
Oh, damn. And then I didn't see it.
There's a
right pretty
brutal pop. Yeah.
You look at the cars getting smashed up on the side.
Yeah, that's a pile-up situation right there. If you look at pictures from this, too, it looks even worse than that. I think The Intercept has some actual pictures.
Let me pull up the piece here. Because, I mean, you know, when it comes down to it, it's like, first of all, I think, you know, it's clear as day. It's like, as Mel's saying, like, you got to get this shit off the road. Like, what the fuck are we doing here where we're letting Elon Musk test drive his insane self-driving stuff on the road? Do not feel safe. I don't even feel safe with the assisted shit.
It's truly
frightening. You see those pictures. I mean, they're brutal. And like a little girl got injured in the thing. I mean, this has had like, you know, real serious consequences. And by the way, there is already a death toll for these self-driving. It's not like this is like the one bad time something has happened here. Like this happens quite frequently. We did on the show, Matt, I think, a few months back with like a Tesla booster in Florida who like, you know, loves Musk, loves his stuff. And New York Times like went with the guy who had gotten the full self-driving early. And, you know, even in that piece, which you thought was going to be a puff piece was then being like, yeah, this shit's not ready for to be out in the public. I mean, that's brutal right there.
I mean, a fucking stroller right there.
On the stroller, I mean, that like...
It's great staging.
That's horrifying. Yeah, I don't know. The idea of a self-driving car is, interesting and could be an interesting technology. But, like, it just seems to be, you know, being rolled out or being tested in this like, manic, you know, Silicon Valley way that it's like when stuff like this happens, it's like we're doing this for like a lunatic billionaire, basically.
Tom says he wants the model that's programmed to flee the scene of an accident.
Well, no, I mean honestly, like this thread here, Dan Nguyen pointed out. This whole Mars catalog freak. All of the cars come with all the hardware needed. Oh, I gotta mute you, David. Sorry. All the cars come with all the hardware needed for full self-driving. Doesn't cost an extra $15,000. Full self-driving doesn't even sell for $15,000. I think they're talking about, we'll get to it, the price drops in China. In the U.S., you can activate via subscription for $200 a month. I mean, how fucking cheap does this shit sound? It's like a fucking NBA 2K add-on. All cars can run it, just a question of pricing. And then Randy comes in. I finally got better this week. It's not worth $15,000. It's not worth $200 a month. Not yet. It has tried to kill me several times.
Oh boy.
It wants to do 35 miles per hour in my kid's daycare parking lot. It crosses the center line when merging on the interstate. It stopped in a busy intersection. I can go on. He, of course, is prompted to by Holzmark catalog. Sounds like you haven't learned to use it properly yet, that guy says. So you should learn to use it properly in your... and then Randy says, should I let it kill me? Is that what I'm supposed to do?
Okay.
Omar's catalog says, no, you're supposed to not turn it on in a daycare parking lot when it says that the speed limit is 35 miles per hour. So again, like, always check it. So always be checking it. So what is this self-driving shit? What is full self-drive? It's not like full HD versus super HD, like how 720p is actually like called full HD, but we all know that's not really HD. This is Randy says, this was leaving the parking lot after dropping my kids off. I backed out of the parking space, activated beta, and it just tried to launch to 35. And that's a fan. That's a guy who owns it, who has the motivation to want to be like, I just recently bought a tablet. It's going to come in the mail soon. I'm going to be incentivized to look at the bright side of that thing, even if I'm like, damn, I probably shouldn't have spent the money on this. This guy is like, this is a death trap. What do I need to do so it doesn't kill me or the kids at the daycare?
And that's the amazing. Whole idea of like buying an expensive vehicle like a Tesla and then having to pay for subscription services afterwards is so insane to me. Like, you are the biggest sucker.
How did we get here, man? He supposedly broke down barriers for the electric vehicle or whatever, but really it's like microtransactions. Like, thanks for pioneering microtransactions.
I mean, we covered it on the, I mean, you know, we do, you're right, we should just do a failed Tesla video of the week, but some we've done in the past have been like this one guy, like there's an issue with the computer in the car and he was trying to sell it. And he couldn't sell it because the title is on the computer.
Oh my God.
Which is like, you know, we already figured the way out of that a long time ago. It's just paper.
That's inefficient. And do not do that.
Well, the thing that's so crazy to me about the Tesla stuff, this is the more trivial side. Like, this is the dangerous shit. Like, this is the shit, like, get off the road. The other reaction I have when I see someone driving a Tesla is at this point, it's like, you're an asshole. It's like, it's cars for people who don't like cars. And that's the thing that's so bizarre to me about Teslas. Like, you know, I don't want to drive, right? It's like, maybe I'm just like too much of an American and like a motorist and I like cool cars and shit like that. But like, I just like, I don't know why I would spend a bunch of money on a vehicle that like,
Okay. I do. There is one use for it. Okay.
Yeah.
Which is raging alcoholics that I can get. Like, I just want to stumble out and say to my car, get me home, you know? In that case. Okay. But like, you know, other than that, I can't think of a reason why you, because you would get bored if you're doing some long drive and you're just sitting there hoping that the car doesn't veer off the road into a ditch. It's kind of,
I've thought about this a lot because my cousin, I used to be big into Fast and Furious. I bought a Honda Accord with my McDonald's money thinking I was going to soup it up. And then I eventually realized like it's enough money into your car, big into cars. And my cousin is even more likes to buy old muscle cars up and fix them back up. And we had this exact same argument. And me, like, I kind of felt like I understand that. Like I love being behind a car and, like hitting the gas. I would also love to be able to get into a fucking box that I can basically recline in and be watching, like, basketball or reading. And not have to worry about shit. Yeah. And also, like, be getting, like, a nice tour of the city or something if I'm not going anywhere, I just want a change of if it was like energy efficient too, like I'm just gonna go like loop around the FDR expressway as I finish this book. Like, I kind of like that, but I do understand, you know, the what do you call them, lead foot contingent, like David, who wants to, you know, be in
want to drive,
but you know, so We've talked about the self-driving stuff for a while, and you know, one of the points I made a while back is that, you know, Tesla is not the first company to explore self-driving, right? I mean, I will say for me personally, it's not something that's super exciting. I do get what you're saying about like, it would be nice to not have to be drunk behind a wheel ever, or just like to be able to just pop in the car and not have to worry about anything like that. Mm-hmm. Get, you know, people who shouldn't be driving just the safe ride home. Fine with that. I can get some of the appeal to it on a certain level. Spiritually, I'm very much against it. But the point of, about self-driving is that like Tesla's not the first company that's been exploring it. One of the points I've been making for a while is like Google for a long time invested a lot of money into building a self-driving car.
I remember that.
And they scrapped it because they said this is too dangerous. And they didn't want to tarnish the Google brand, which, you know.
By hitting strollers? Yeah.
Destroying strollers. So it's not that like Musk is like visionary brain genius who like solved the issue. He was the only one reckless enough for a while to be putting this out on the road. But he's got some competition, as we have right here in the great state of Texas here in Austin. This car company that is trying to build these, I think these are supposed to be taxis eventually. This car company, Cruise, this is some of their self-driving that they've been testing all around Austin. And like, let's just give this a quick, just check out how that's going.
Why are you not doing perfect? These are completely safe autonomous vehicles. Are they going to run the yellow light? No. Cool. And then the last thing is see there are no people in here.
Are you fucking kidding me,
yeah,
man? You should smash. People should smash the shit out of that. Sorry,
that's the same company that rolls through my neighborhood a lot, and they're definitely like they're not ready for the road. They're just figuring them out on the road, you know, which is
it's really weird.
Is there somebody like at base probably like watching that shit with a joystick?
You know, I don't know, because like I think for a while they were being followed, and now they're trying to push them, you know, unsupervised, which is why people.
Somebody should push them unsupervised into a body of water. And like that's one of the most dystopian videos I've ever seen in my life.
And you know, just be very clear if you're listening. What happened there is that car veered off into the bike lane and accelerated. This isn't a one-off. This cyclist and a few other people have been capturing videos like this all across Austin. So this wasn't just like, one difficult turn or whatever. Like this is something that's frequent. And this is here from Fox 7 here in Austin, self-driving car caught on camera in Austin bike lane. Let's get to the company statement. He says, I think this is a pretty reasonable response to this. It's just seems so reckless for them to be allowing cars that can make not small mistakes, but egregious mistakes, missing a lane by 16 feet. You know, that just seems egregious on streets. The company Cruise released a statement that reads, safety is Cruise's top priority.
No.
It's maybe second, third.
Yeah, safety of the profit.
Not just for our passengers, but for everyone we share the road with. Well, thank you very much, Cruise.
No, what does priority mean? Like, what does language mean if you say that?
There's other there's another story out there I don't have. I'm sorry, but
I would advise, like, if I were their press person, I would have advised him to say. Safety is among our priorities. Like maybe something like that. Safety is in the mix of our various priorities.
Yeah. Contrary to what people are saying, we actually are aware of what safety means.
one of their excuses that they said is that nobody was in the bike lane.
Right.
There's like, no harm, no foul.
Oh, great. Thank you. Yeah. Aren't y'all testing this technology? Like, what the fuck? And like, the thing is here is like, in Austin, like this is unfortunate, but it's a reality of this city, and many cities in Texas, because we're very underfunded by our state governments. You know, the argument here is like, if you watch that video closely, you'll see like the bike lane is not very clear. It's not in the best condition, right? I'm not making excuses for the company. I'm making a point, but why it's so fucking dangerous. Austin, like there are so many roads that are like that, where like when they're repainting them, they'll strip it and there'll be like 2-3 days where there's no median paint on the road, which is very scary as a driver. But I at least have like a human brain and can sort of figure out what's going on. Those cars are just like, oh, I'm in like a one lane highway. I can do whatever the fuck I want. And that's what's so dangerous. That's why you want human beings behind the wheel and not just a fucking car flying around.
And it shows how dependent these companies are on our actual public infrastructure.
Yes.
And they can't operate without it. They're absolutely parasitical. All these guys, like all the venture capital that went into this money should have been taxed and put into the roads to begin with.
Public infrastructure, Matt, but like in this case in Austin and all over the damn country, the weakness of state and local governments to stand up to corporations until something bad happens, right? Like these companies flourish in environments where they're able to just sort of get away with it. And most of these politicians out there, they either don't give a shit or they're like criminally negligent, right? They're like, wow, these smart boys came into my office and they were talking to me about Bitcoin or self-driving cars. And I don't want to be the politician who's known for being the one against technology and progress. I mean, for fuck's sake, Austin spent so much goddamn money on Bitcoin recently. I don't know if you saw this, RM, but they were under the former mayor now, Steve Adler, to explore uses for blockchain and Bitcoin technology on the city level. And everyone's like, hey, you don't need to explore it. It's stupid. Don't fucking do it. And I can't remember how much money they spent, but it was just an egregious sum, like studying how bad Bitcoin is. And the report basically said what we all said is like, it doesn't seem like there's a use case yet. But of course, they had to justify the fact that they spent all this money on it. Like, but there are promising here and there. Shit. And it's just like, you know, we fucking paint the bike lanes, man.
I know. Yeah. Deal with the urgent stuff first. Yeah. It's unbelievable.
We have a few other Tesla related things. I mean, there was this image.
Also, can we just say, cause this is post game, you know, we put out a short of, we did a Jordan Peterson talking about Elon Musk and we cut it. And like Matt and I were like, this is what, like, Jordan Peterson, like, he invented the car. He invented the car. He's pretty good at that. Ooh, car suck. He's like, the boring company, you think it's a joke, but it's very, very serious. It's like, no, it's a fucking joke. And he put this video out, and it went a little bit big on TikTok, Matt. And, the bootlickers are out of control.
Oh, my God.
It's what's so funny to me is how Musk has gone from, one, being a kind of, like, poster boy of, like, the Patagonia, like, liberal class to now all these bubbas who like they all hate fucking electric cars, right? Because it is like manly gasoline. But they also like you cannot criticize Elon Musk, which is a really fucking funny combination.
Yeah. But you know what actually that reminds me of something I'm pissed about, which is like why is that still on the road? It's because not only Elon, but also all these fucking investors. Like, we have an entire class of people who would be super pissed at Joe Brandon if he did that. And it's like, we had this guy call in his retirements and fucking Tesla stock. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's a problem. And it's led to this brainlessness because those motherfuckers expect a return.
Wasn't a lot of the hope in the Tesla stock based on the potential for totally autonomous cars? Like, wasn't that a big part of it?
Yeah, it was based on a lot of Elon's lies.
Well, that's when he shifted, was like when it became clear that like they were going to lose the like, because the first promise of Tesla was that it was going to own the electric car market.
Right.
And then it became clear that they weren't. So then they shifted to full automation. Like he said as much in filings or whatever, that like the future of Tesla is entirely dependent on them being first to market with self-driving, which is why they're pushing it and being so dangerous with it. It's a desperate push that is like putting your life at risk for the bottom line of Elon Musk and Tesla stockholders. It's really fucking nasty, man.
Is Elon Musk, he's like dumping a lot of that Tesla, or he already has dumped a lot of that Tesla stock, right? Is you guys think he's trying to make like a total pivot to like right wing, right? I mean, he pretty much already has, right? To like right wing, I don't know, political figure or something like that.
I think he's really fucked himself, honestly, with this Tesla deal. I mean, the Twitter deal. Like, I don't know if you remember, Matt, but when we came out, when that deal came out, I said something along the lines like, this is the kind of deal that would get you laughed out of like any MBA classroom. It was so bad. And because the Twitter deal is tied to Tesla stock, he has to unload all this shit to deal with the debt obligation that he has on fucking Twitter, which is so insane. So like, I don't know, like, you know, Musk, I don't give him credit for a lot of things. He's been pretty good at playing the market to a certain extent throughout his career. Like that's like his skill, mm-hmm. More than being an engineer or a designer or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So like maybe there's some kind of big brain play that I don't understand, but from what it looks like to me, it looks like he's in a lot of damn trouble, with this shit. And I don't know what he was thinking, but it's because he surrounded himself with yes men his entire career.
Yeah, absolutely.
We have some footage. This is from China. They cut the prices on Tesla cars, which I don't know. I mean, David, you're the economist. Is it good when you cut prices? Is that a sign
not
of
for you, business?
You're doing well. Here's a bunch of and it's funny, like the Elon fans who come in to be like, actually, they're just mad because they paid a price that it's now lower than. Yeah. That's what everybody knows this is. Like, what do you think? It's not that they're just mad. They just decided Teslas are stupid now. But anyway, a lot of people they want the new lower price.
Oh boy.
So that's what's going on in China. And we have a few other things too. Just to update on the Las Vegas Hyperloop thing.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Sorry, I shouldn't. The Hyperloop is something different. This is right, or is this the same thing?
The Hyperloop was like the tunnel that they're
the
driving.
Boring.
Yeah, the boring.
Okay.
Tunnel.
Well, this is what a vision of it back in 2018 was. Let's just refresh ourselves.
Oh, is this? This is the shooter. Yeah, this is a different one.
So yeah, this.
Oh wow!
Look at that, and it's.
Wow.
Transportation for a lot of people. They're kind of a lot of people. It's, you know, probably not as much as a tram even then, but it'll lower down like that. And let's see how fast it jets off.
The boring conversations.
My God.
And it merges like that.
Pretty seamless merge there.
Now, hope it doesn't.
Yeah, hopefully those merges go okay. You know how they'll sort of reduce. You know what's good for reducing traffic is having less vehicles. And what's really great for that is if you sort of extend it, maybe put some more wheels on it, some more space for people to be. I mean, it's just like, it's amazing the kind of like pretzels he has twisted himself into to basically not make the argument that like, no, we need good public transportation.
Yes, exactly. Because that's what this guy is. He is an anti-public transportation activist with an unlimited budget. Yeah. And so that sort of fancy thing, which is like, yeah, it's not just, we're not just going to make this special hole for our cars. It's going to be the public transportation replacement of the future. Look at this concept vehicle. And instead, what we end up with is just a novelty sort of application for his dumbass cars that stop on
the middle of the Vegas loop. Elon's answer to traffic. It's going to save about 15 minutes or 20 minutes of walking. I'm going to show you what that looks
like. And we should just say like 20 minutes of walking, but that's in Las Vegas. And I've not been to Vegas, but I've seen the layout. And I don't think it seems like a city laid out to be walkable. I'll just say that.
We take the escalators downstairs and pick up a Tesla. This is the central station. So this is what Vegas Loop by Boring and Tesla looks like.
So I'll just say there are a dozen train stations in New York City that look significant. There's hundreds, maybe 100 that look worse, but so many that look way better than this. And we've all seen,
I mean, how many people are working there too? It's like, it's.
Yeah. Okay. You're going to ride with these two people.
Perfect. Right?
So you get in it.
And here's our car.
With two other people.
There you go.
There's a driver there.
Thank you very much.
So you have to pay for a driver.
Thank you.
Like you said,
hello. How's it going?
As far as like the workers, instead of like a train where you have one person going, and there's like 90 people in the back. You got one dumb asshole watching the tablet in the front of Tesla, and three others being like, oh yeah, this is pretty cool, huh? How long have you been, do you like being the engineer for a car that's supposed to be autonomous?
It's deeply weird that that's what that ended up with. Because I remember him talking about, and he did that contest for the Hyperloop with colleges and all this. And it was like, when I first heard about that, I was like, it might be interesting to figure out some new kind of mass transit. Mm-hmm. That, what we just saw, was never, that is like the most disappointing. I mean, you know, if you're an Elon stan, that should be disappointing. Because updating, you know, New York City subways, that's a cool idea. Maybe make them more modern. We've seen those trains in China and all that. That's cool. Or those stations in China. It's very cool, you know. But that's nothing related to mass transit. It's ridiculous.
If that didn't have the lighting, I think Elon might be bankrupt right now. Like that's all it needs to dazzle like the city hall or city council people. Like, yeah, Elon, we should look about doing that here. Is the fucking, you know, go through RGB strip lighting. Really disgusting lame stuff.
It's so disgusting because this has just been a long time, like, push to basically try to distract from public transit, which we all get at this point. But the other thing is that, like, his ability, because of his money and his skill in sort of bamboozling local and city governments across the country, like, has like real effects. Like, I'm so scared to hear about what's going on with the Boring Company, his tunneling company up in Pflugerville, Texas, where he's been at, just knowing the damage that he's already done in California. You know, they gave him a big deal in Kyle, Texas, to build one of these underground tunnels. You know, the thing you got to remember here is that we live over a huge aquifer, and if you dig deep enough under the soil, you're going to hit limestone. Which doesn't behave and react very well to tunneling. That's why there haven't been a lot of very successful deep tunnel projects in this part of the world. And Musk just like thinks that he could just, you know, plop this shit down wherever. And then Kyle, like, they accepted this insane pitch from him. It's, you know, Kyle's not a big city. I don't want to insult the politicians there, but I have a sense that they're not the best and brightest. You know,
their BS detectors might not be as sensitive as they should be, maybe.
Well, they're just like, oh my, like, the future's coming to Kyle, Texas. We got to take the deal, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And they did a feasibility study on the tunnel, and their engineers were like, oh, it looks like there's some problems with your designs, and this might, you know, there might be some issues. So they send that back to the Boring Company, and they didn't get a response. They didn't get a response, and now they've canceled the project after wasting a lot of money and time versus trying to find out some other public transit solutions for a town that really needs it as more and more people are moving to the region. I mean, it's just like, the thing is, like, he's taking a money and attention away from public transit, and he's just doing a lot of fucking damage at the same time, right? Absolutely. To the environment, and just wasting public money on this shit. And I hope that it starts to stop. I mean, I'd be curious what y'all think. That, like, I've been noticing an uptick in, like, angry Tesla owner videos on Twitter.
I've seen a lot of those. Yeah, it does seem to be building.
Do you think they're being more represented now because Elon Musk is less popular, or that people are a little bit more willing now to come forward with it because he's sort of been discredited? That it's like, oh, this isn't you just being a bad owner, not understanding the product. Or do you think it's just like that Musk is hated now, so a lot of people are sort of looking to dump their shitty cars and stop lying to the rest of us?
I think the people that really mattered only liked him because they had money in him.
Yeah.
And now that he's fucked their investment, they're pissed. And I think if it went right back, they would shut up.
Absolutely. They would be right back on board that he's a genius.
let's just do a little bit more propaganda against Elon to try to keep this stock price low. That is a goal of mine, just to state that explicitly.
Somebody asked us what our short on Tesla was, and it's like, we probably should
have. It's in my heart. Yeah, like when Tesla.
We're doing market manipulation on Left Record.
but it's like, yeah, it's just for how it makes me feel. And here is the Tesla truck. If folks remember, Elon demonstrated the shatterproof glass on stage a while ago, and the glass shattered. I do want to zoom out a little bit, though, and show. The tweet that this was in the context of, because it shows the psychology of Tesla owners a little bit, maybe on the nose. Here it is. Tesla. This is Tesla economics. I love to learn economics, but in the form of Tesla.
Wait, can you check that verification for us really quick?
Oh yeah, that's going to be a paid for, I believe. Oh yeah, let's see here. Yep, subscribe to Twitter Blue, of course.
Oh boy,
good instinct there. And so before I let that play, he writes, "When I get the Cybertruck, I will have no worries." At Elon Musk. "Go ahead and throw a steel ball at my car, or even shoot the car, because this beast will protect
what
me."
What are you doing?
I mean, yeah, this is just the absolute nonsense from the jump. I mean, why would I, like, okay.
I'm afraid.
I mean, really what this is it's supposed to be like the Blade Runner fantasy. Like, that's what was attempted to do around this. And so the throwing the thing at the window is a joke, but it's a joke that, like, it ended up not even working. And now they're like sticking. No, the joke will work is what it feels like to me. It's like, yeah. So weird.
So here is this slow motion. They do slow motion because, frankly, when you speed it up, it looks even worse than this. But this guy somehow thought this was a vindication for the shatterproof technology. But we'll look closely at this.
Yeah, I saw this on your Twitter. You caught this. I can't believe this.
It fucking breaks.
Yeah.
Wind up not, you know, not
a great, old. Yeah, not another, a very soft.
It's not a baseball throw.
Yeah. Well,
let's just pause it there.
It's like a little league throw.
Okay, so it bounces, and so far, I mean, there's a lot of give there, I will say.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And that's fine, but we'll go a little bit further, and it just falls off. Like, what are you talking about? Someone could crowbar that off now, and you aren't safe.
The whole thing is that you're protected from the enemies outside of your whatever cyber car. So, the window is going to protect me, and then the window falls down. I think that might be missing the point a little bit there.
The point is a Tesla. Folks, there's no escape. There's no place to hide.
You gotta live as much with the rest of those friends. It better make nice.
Give in to the fear, uncertainty, and the doubt that was right the entire time.
I mean, this is an obvious point that I know you guys probably agree with, but having really, you know, like elegant public transportation would be so much cooler than all this nonsense, you know, to be able to just jump on a train and get around and not have to worry about all the bull crap that I've put up with having a car, you know, it'd be cool, you know, but
it's literally why I moved to New York. I had chose between LA and New York for grad school. And I picked here because I'd been to London and I experienced public transportation in the form of buses and trains. And that's just a better lifestyle for my money. Especially like as a 20-year-old, I mean, I guess if you have families, you want minivans and stuff like that, but that's not my life. And it's shabby that we don't have anything like that. And frankly, we have a lot less than previous generations used to. You look at like the transit maps for most American cities and they had trolleys and shit.
It's so crazy. Yeah.
Somebody says in the chat, the transit system in Paris is cushy. For me as a tourist, I went there for a couple days and it was great. Like it really was great. It was really nice, well-maintained, and it got you, especially as a tourist, like it gets you everywhere you need to go very, very quickly. Like, you know, you want to go to the museums, you'll get right there. Yeah. And they do keep it nice too. That's a cool thing. So, I mean, yeah, I don't know. It would be so much cooler if that's what we were, or at least there was some, you know, some focus on that, you know?
God willing. I mean, hopefully the Project Connect here will be successful. I'm nervous. Yeah. There's a lot of attempts to lower the budget already. It's like, you just got to, when you start, you got to just invest. If you half-ass a public transit system, it's not going to be good. But
I know, and it'll be worth it though. If you, it's such a good investment. You know,
well, you were here when they remember when there was a city ballot in the 2010s or something to do it, and it got voted down. Instead, everyone voted to fund the Circuit of the Americas.
I remember that.
People don't know we have an F1 Formula One racing track. Public transit lost, but the F1 funding succeeded.
So that they could do like Taylor Swift shows in the absolute middle of nowhere.
And, so I mean, weird. I went to a Willie Nelson concert there, which was awesome to see Willie. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. But it's just like, it's a Formula One racetrack in Texas, which means there's no tree cover, nothing. So it's like, you know, it was 105 degrees. I was out there for a country music festival, dying, sunburnt, you know.
Yeah.
You couldn't bring in water, of course, either. So you're just chugging $15 beer. It's just not good.
Driven past it and like been like, you know, in the parking lot of it. And it does seem like almost like a Hunger Games-esque scenario where it's just like, you know, the doors are locked from the outside of this thing. It seems like very, very scary.
I've tried DART. Have you guys experienced DART in Dallas?
I haven't done it.
Rapid Transit. I mean, it was not bad in my experience.
Those are, and like I can't remember the name of it in Houston. The one in Houston is pretty decent too. It's just limited as to where it goes. But it's just like, not to be too parochial or anything like that, but like sometimes I'm like, oh, is public transit going to like, just hear me out for a second. Is public transit going to like change the vibe? You know, is it going to make me feel like I'm in like New York City and not in like Texas? Right. Mm-hmm. And I remember I was sitting at like this po' boy place in Houston, having a beer outside, and like the train was coming by. It was a beautiful Texas. It's like, we should have this shit everywhere. Like, what the fuck? Yeah. Especially in a city like Houston, which is a massive one and desperately needs it. Mm-hmm. But should we do some Discords? We have Discords, and we actually have a special first, Matt. Unknown to me, but we have a video submission for tonight too.
Whoa, wow.
from a listener. But let's do some Discords to round it out. And thanks so much, Arm, for coming. I'm going to save the Mark Fisher for a Griscom stream in a couple weeks, I think, folks. I love Mark Fisher, but he can be a little, even though he's trying to do the opposite, it can be a little depressing.
Mark's trying to cheer us up again.
Yeah, Mark's trying to cheer us up again by talking about the extreme depression in the youth. first question of the night from Harpreet says, there was a recent quote by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, which was, we do negotiate, but what we do, we don't do is bring them publicly in order to empower not just the Republicans, but the fascist flank of the Republican Party. How does the left deal with that critique that weakening the Democratic Party opens avenues for the right? I have some thoughts, but if any of y'all want to tee off first, go for it.
I mean, I think it's something to be aware of. I heard the full context of that on her Instagram, and so I don't really understand why people took quite exception of it beyond just the impatience with wanting them to use leverage, which is, you know, one we all want to see. And like, I think the more salient thing is like is there real symmetry between the Freedom Caucus and what we have with the Squad and the Progressives and that sort of stuff. But I do think like the fascist wing is a problem, but I also prefer like Ilhan's approach, which is like, I'm going to go over and talk to him and ask him and see if there's anything fortuitous about, like, Ilhan was said, like, I like this military stuff that they're doing. because I've been trying to do that for a while. I think taking advantage of it too, as a, like, I didn't call them fascists, but also see what, like, what, how we can use the fascists going destabilize the Republicans for our benefit is the right way to go, because I don't think the GOP is too distinct from those fascists themselves, or nor frankly a lot of Democrats.
So I've only seen it out of context, so maybe I'm missing something, but I'm sorry. I think this is just complete bullshit. It's just we do need all of those people. Like, if you, like, when AOC first comes into office, like, she started off by, like, sitting in protest outside of Nancy Pelosi's office. And it's just like, that was like the hope and the idea of what the role of those folks, if we accept the argument, which I think is the correct one generally, is that, like, it's a marginal group in Congress, it's a marginal group in the Democratic Party, it becomes desperately clear, then yeah, we do need more. But how do you create more? Well, do you do it by making it seem like they're the same thing as the Democratic Party? No. You have to be making it very clear that there's a distinct difference between a Nancy Pelosi, a Chuck Schumer, Hakeem Jeffries. And, you know, so that's really frustrating. And on a second note, this is like less of like, and again, like I've said this a million times, so I don't feel the need to really repeat myself over and over, but it's like, again, I don't think like it's cynical from them. I just think that they have a little bit of a lack of commitment and bad politics when it comes to the crucialness of this fight, not just in the sense of like reshifting what the Democratic Party's like congressional agenda is, but in the sense of like building real bottom up working class power. And like, you know, if you've watched my stuff, to all the listeners, like, you know, I did that documentary on what was left populism. And one of the things I really focused on is this theory of called like the iron law of oligarchy. And one of the arguments in there is that, like, if you look at the history of social democracy, you see a lot of social democratic politicians who do a lot of good for working class politicians. They stay in power for a long time. So it's not that they're wicked or anything like that, but they do start to ease their critique. They do start to become incorporated more into this thing. And it's not because the way everyone always talks about AOC and all these people is like, they're getting the bag. Like, somebody's like whispering secrets to them and giving them a bunch of shit. No, they're getting fucked. Like, if they really wanted to like make money and do well for themselves, they would do a cinema and not do what they do, because they get plenty of hatred for what they do. So my thing is not that like, oh, they're like betraying us and doing all this kind of stuff. My problem is that it's ineffective. And one of the arguments about the iron law of oligarchy is that, like, you spend time with people, you start to realize that, like, oh, the opposition or the other parties, like, the quote from Leo Pan is like, they don't have horns on their heads. A couple of them are even nice folks. And you also start to realize that, like, you don't want to have to go back to your life before and working a job and all this kind of thing. So being in office is like important for you. And how do you prevent somebody else from sort of taking your position from you? It's by keeping knowledge. And when AOC says we're having private conversations that you don't know about, that to me is you are keeping knowledge from the base about what is actually happening in politics. And that's bad. Again, not because I think you're being co-opted or tricked or like taking dirty deals or anything like that. It's like, you aren't allowing us, you're not sharing the knowledge with us to make us all better and more prepared to enact politics. And it's just like, at this point, like, we need much more from these folks than what we're getting.
Which is why, like, nobody was happy with like them just getting oversight committees and shit 2 years ago. Like, everybody basically thought that was a failure. Even if they got those committees and a safe floor vote on Medicare for All, that probably that definitely still wouldn't have been enough. And they need to be withdrawing, like, say, fundraising, things like that. Like, that, those sorts of threats need to be on the table, because they are getting snowed. Ilhan came on Majority Report and said, yeah, we'll have somebody lined up to challenge Hakeem Jeffries. That didn't happen. Jeffries just walked straight to it.
And he's awful, by the way.
He is worse than Pelosi.
Absolutely.
Like, I think, which is, and I don't think much of Pelosi. At all. I think she'd like fucking take her to The Hague and talk about what she knew about the Iraq war, but and what she's willing, how she's willing to sell it. But like, fucking Hakeem Jeffries is a psycho. And did you see his ABC speech, by the way?
Oh my god, yeah. autocracy over, what was
that? Oh my God, the alphabet thing.
If you want to feel alienated from the Democratic base, just go ahead and look at those quote tweets.
I feel so fucking alienated from people in general, like that did over the top.
It is like, whoa, damn, what have you guys been doing this whole time?
Well, isn't that the thing? I mean, me as sort of a normal outsider, you know, trying to pay attention to this stuff, it just seems like, you know, if we're, or maybe that's like the key that normal people need to become more, you know, more focused on like material politics rather than this sort of, you know, nonsense like alphabet, you know, whatever.
Oh, man. The amount of people. It was wild because you think like Pelosi just got the benefit of that because she's been around since Kennedy and, you know, there's like a institutional memory to like, you know, kiss her ass. Mm-hmm. But to see people like come in and say, Hakeem Jeffries just brought dignity back to the people's house. It's like, well, no, what? Oh, no, he didn't. And he's a bad guy.
You thought, again, you thought Pelosi wasn't friendly to the left. Like, Hakeem Jeffries, like, actually sees, like, the Bernie wing as, like, an existential threat to politics. And there would be, if you thought there weren't enough openings of political opportunity for that coalition under Pelosi, it would be way worse under a Jeffries speakership if he ever is able to inherit that. Fun question, and I'm gonna throw this to our illustrious guest. Chaotic Socialist asks, David, I'm visiting Austin for the first time this coming weekend. What are some food places I got to check out and anything else in general I should check out?
I mean, good question. I mean, I guess you got to get barbecue, right? Mm-hmm. Go to the good barbecue places, La Barbecue. Valentina's is really good. Valentina's are really good if you want to go down south. So barbecue for sure. I don't know what else. I always freeze up when people ask.
I know it is a scary question.
Yeah. What are some of the institutions that like you have to go when? I would never tell anybody to go see the Bats though, because that just seems like way too touristy. You know. Yeah.
I mean, it can be pretty nice when it's in season, but the vibe has changed.
Yeah.
Well, just on the barbecue thing, because that is the most important, is like La Barbecue, excellent. Obviously, like Franklin's is super famous, but like that's like you get there at 7 a.m. and you wait in line all day. And like if that's something that's like you really want to do, like I'm not telling you not to do it, but I also wanted to do other things while you're in town. I'm then waiting in line.
Go to the LBJ barbecue, Library.
What?
Yeah.
Go to the LBJ Library. That's what I'd
that's
be doing.
True. That's true. La Barbecue, Valentina's, other barbecue places that I really like. Interstellar is super good. Though I don't know what their weekend hours are. Distant Relatives is out of this world. It's a little bit atypical. So if like you don't have a lot of Texas barbecue experience, I don't know if I would say it's like it's great food. It's just like the guy has a really cool like. It's called West African diaspora cooking is the way he frames it. So it really celebrates like the African and Black influence on like Texas barbecue and like Southern food in general. So amazing. And I'll be completely honest, if somebody were to tell me to go to a restaurant that had like a political social message, I'd probably be like, okay, you know, but this place actually has some of the best barbecue I've had in a long time. Their chicken is out of this world. Something I wouldn't typically order. And if you're just trying to get your barbecue itch and you don't like, and like you're not somebody like me who's going to be like, oh, you know, like, is this brisket like absolutely perfect or not? Styles and Switch is super good.
I was going to say that. I was like, is he going to cause a ruckus about Styles? I always call it Style Switch, but that's probably wrong. But over there, it's kind of, yeah, it's over there on what, like North Lamar or whatever?
Yeah, it's super good. You can get in and out.
In and out, easy.
But you got to get, you got to get tacos. I think Grandma's breakfast tacos are super good. I like Veracruz breakfast tacos. There's one downtown and there's one at a beer bar, outdoor beer area called Radio. That's really good. I shouldn't waste too much more time on this. I could go on for a while. Trying to give them good advice. Denada is also a really excellent spot for casual Mexican, great margaritas. They have really good barbacoa tacos. They have those. Have you ever had the Mexico City quesadillas before? Really good. They have those there. So that's a place that's worth going. And like, I mean, you know, really, like, I think some things to try to look out for. And this weekend's going to be beautiful. So I'd suggest check out the Greenbelt if you want to see the nature around here. The Austin Greenbelt is amazing. It's like I go there before almost every show. I usually take a little hike. There's a lot. Just type in Austin Greenbelt. You can find there's different access points. Walk around Town Lake or Lady Bird Lake, as they call it now. Anyway, and you know, also feel free to hit me up and I can give you more suggestions if there's anything in particular that you're looking for. I don't know. I feel very like it's spiritually important because Austin's being so commodified and fucked and so much of the good stuff is disappearing. Oh, wait, really last thing and then we'll move on. Music. You got to see music when you're here. If you like country, my favorite places to go are Sagebrush down south. White Horse is really good. Samstown Point is out of like a little bit out of town. So if you don't have a car, you probably can't go to it, but that's really excellent. Seaboys is an awesome blues club, Continental Club. Excellent as well. And, you know, if you fuck around on 6, go on the other side of 35, in my opinion.
Yeah, go east. Exactly.
Go
yeah.
east on 6, and you'll have a better time than if you stay in the more downtown, because downtown is just frat boys and bad memories.
Terrible.
but I hope you have a good time. Dave from Jamaica says, just update on plane ticket. Because Matt was talking about planes earlier. It cost me around $300 to travel from Jamaica to New York. That said, I have to watch ticket prices like a hawk.
Yeah, I mean, New York, you can get really good flights out of here, but not to North Dakota. North Dakota's prices have been...
Dude, that's so fun. I thought I had a bad just having to fly home all the time. Think about having to spend a small fortune every time you want to go see.
Yeah, it's like... It's legit, like, it's the same price as going to Paris. And it's like, well, you know, Bismarck is pretty nice. It's not quite Paris. But my family's there, so, you know.
We have a – well, wait, just last thing. Philbo Schwangen says public library is really nice. Do you feel – like, public library is very controversial. A lot of people hate the new library. I'm just curious if you fall on camera.
You know what? I've only been there maybe a handful of times. I do think that it's aesthetically, it's pretty nice. I went to some reading there. They have like a public room where they have people, you know, authors to come and talk was pretty nice. I don't have a ton of experience with it, but
go to book people if you're just visiting, if you
yeah,
want
go to book like, people.
Go
yeah.
to book people. It's around the corner from there. All right, we have a special message from our friend down under. First video message in Left Reckoning history. So let's see if this works.
Hour 100. Giggum boys, you did it. It's very nice to know that between Matthew and David, it's your boy Dylan, by the way. You have put together, you know, your 50-year-old men each, 100 in total. It's great, the show, as always. I listen to it while I'm making this beefcake. Look at how funky my division character is. Yeah. Barbecuing and stuff. It's always good in the LR world. So I have a question about barbecue etiquette. I was at a friend of mine's over the weekend. And he took me to a friend of his where there was a friend of this person. And my friend, had bought him really big barbecue. This big black thing, really shiny and whatnot. And it seemed I made several jokes because, you know, obviously, you know, that's a very, you know, middle-class gift to purchase. And, you know, he took great offense to this. The friend took great offense to this. I was undermining the importance of the gift or the meaning of the gift. And I was just wondering, you know, hey, what's the best way to kind of discuss class differences amongst people, especially people you know who aren't going to be receptive to it, based on your own experiences or just generally, that alienating them? Big questions, fellas. As I said, 100 episodes. Congratulations to both of you. I hope you guys have a wonderful, wonderful evening.
I might need a little bit of clarification on his question. Was he like, so he was at a friend's house and he had like a very fancy barbecue, like a smoker or something. And he made some comment on like, maybe he was like, ooh, very fancy. And there maybe some class issues arose from that. Is that what's going on?
I reckon that's what he was saying. Okay. I was trying to figure out what the black shiny thing was. I think he's talking about a smoker, right?
Yeah. It's gotta be, right? Right. And he was like, this does seem like something from like a, you know, like a, I don't know, like a movie or something where it's like, ooh, somebody does pretty well for themselves. Interesting. And then it becomes a whole thing. I guess what I would say is just if you're at a party, this is what I do. If somebody invites me over, I'm just trying not to, you know, I'm just trying to be a fun guest. I'm not trying to cause any problems. And I'm definitely not going to bring up any class issues, you know. Maybe we can get into that eventually. But if we're just trying to drink and have fun, Mr. Marx is not coming into the picture. But that's just me. What do you guys think?
I will say, like, as somebody who, you know, thinks of myself as a bit of an internationalist, like, I remember my friends in the UK were trying to get into barbecue, so they sent me, like, the smokers they were looking at, and I could not believe how fucking expensive they were in the United Kingdom, and I was like, I'm never leaving this goddamn country, like, a Weber, like, the cheap Weber was, like, $250 or something insane. They're for like the base model, nothing fancy, anything like that. So, you know, when I see a barbecue grill, unless it's those ones that I you know, the sad fact is I'm probably going to get one, the Traegers, the automatic ones. Mm-hmm. Spiritually, I'm very much against them, but they're very much like weekend warrior, kind of suburban dad kind of smokers. I don't know. I mean, I think, man, if you're at a barbecue, you got to eat the meat. I agree with you.
Choke it down. Just choke it down. Don't worry too much about it.
I mean, honestly, these days, like, I think, like, class difference is important. And, like, look, I've been on both sides of this in the sense that, like, you know, it was really alienating for me when I went to school for the first time, like, coming from the world I did to, like, I'm not even just talking culture. I'm just talking about, like, class-wise, coming from poor working class family to like spending time with people who are talking about like all the vacations and shit they're going on, which is just like, you know, unimaginable to me. So I know how that can sort of feel. And sometimes you want to remind folks of a difference, but like for me these days, man, it's like, I think trying to build a with us and against them mentality versus like generally trying to build like, even with like upper middle class people, like I can swallow a little bit about more than I probably could of 10 years ago. If I think it will sort of help make somebody more militant or have more solidarity in general, but maybe
Dylan say if he had imbibed at all at this barbecue. Cause to me it sounds like situations I've had where I get back from a social get together and was like, I was a bit loud. Was I a little bit too loud maybe over the course of the evening, rubbing people the wrong way? My bad. I think that's probably all that happened here. I don't know if it you know, brings in any, I don't know if this is really like a Marxist discussion.
Right.
I think it's a Dylan's gotta chill.
Yeah, he was asking more of an etiquette question, like maybe he maybe he wasn't the best guest or something. So
I remember I got invited to one Thanksgiving in New York here where a friend's parents were in town, and my girlfriend told me the next day that about we left after I started yelling about Walt Disney.
That's the thing too, is like, I've always, like, these days I'm so much more chill on this stuff, but like, I used to be like the not that I was like really obnoxious ever, but it's just like, you know, I'm not going to start a political conversation with somebody unless it sort of gets like put in my face at this point. But also I have an outlet for it too. So
right.
I think
true.
Like I have like the ability to sort of say, well, I don't want to work, you know, when I'm at a
well, bar. Also, it's like if you're at some party, if you're at a barbecue and somebody, you get into some political thing with somebody and you've had like a couple shots or whatever and some beer, a bunch of beers or whatever, I don't think you're going to, you know, they're going to be like, you know what, you really have some good points. Let's go out and protest. Like it's not really going to, like nothing's really going to happen. You can just more like divert the conversation a little bit and just have a good time and worry about trying to do some real politics later, I think, you know?
Mm-hmm. Dylan, just give us some context. He does say, like, there's something deeper here, folks. He says, like
British middle class.
This guy says he considers himself a middle class guy, but his dad has a $3 million estate. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, you know him better than we do, so you know how to talk to him. I would probably tease somebody.
Be ruder next time.
If somebody says some shit like that to me, I would probably be fucking teasing them too. So I'm flipping sides on y'all. I'm with Dylan now.
That's a good point. That's a good point, actually. Yeah.
Tommy, our good friend, who's been very tame in roasting me for Texas losing to Washington in the Alamo Bowl, says, optional personal question for folks. What's the worst job you've ever worked? Why? And what was the best part about it?
Ooh.
Yeah. I mean, I've worked a ton of terrible jobs. The only thing that, I mean, the best thing about it is that you get so much, like, especially if you're like, you know, you do the kind of things we do where you could recount some of these stories. I really regret not taking detailed notes on some of these truly wretched jobs that I've had. I mean, I have some of that. But I do think, I know it's a little bit like silly to say, but you do get great material out of those jobs. You do get funny, like there's always like strange people that you work with at bad jobs and stuff like that. So that's a silver lining to that always to me. But
I guess I probably get, Old Navy, I hated working at Old Navy, and do remember one day, it was the same day Michael Jackson died, and it was also $2 flip-flop day from Old Navy.
Connection.
and so I, being the only male working that day, tall, was the one to get up on the ladder and reach behind the area for the new flip-flops, because we were selling flip-flops. You want to see middle-aged women go absolutely insane. It's on Old Navy when they can get just cheap-ass flip-flops for $2 a piece. And I'm just sitting there on top of a ladder, like, dropping down sizes on different people. And, you know, every once in a while checking my phone to see, like, oh, yeah, Michael Jackson died. That's a pretty interesting thing. But I hated that job. The best part of it was when I could tell my manager to put me on the changing rooms so I could fold clothes and watch Shrek 2 all afternoon.
Yeah, at a lot of those jobs, you know, where things get slow, you gotta figure out a way to listen to something, or if there's a way you can read a book at the same time, like that.
Man, the new earbuds that can go in, like you can put one. That would have been a game changer for me. I would have been so much more productive.
Oh, absolutely.
I will just say up top, the hardest job I've ever done was doing concrete. I mean, that was just hell on earth. Just hot as hell, hard physical labor, just brutal. But it wasn't even the worst job ever. The worst job I ever worked was in South Carolina. I worked at this seafood buffet, which is the largest seafood buffet in the Southeast. It seats 2,000 people.
Oh my God.
And it was just chaos, you know, just families on vacation. And the worst thing is, like, the buffet was like $27. So people would like get it and then get sort of worked up about how much it cost at the end, which was like always really annoying, you know. Like we had crab, I mean the place sucked, but like it was crab legs and prime rib. It was a buffet,
yeah.
You know,
like yeah,
a
nice yeah, yeah.
And those people would go nuts. I mean, there was a guy who, one of the former mayors of the town I lived in South Carolina, worked there, and he used to keep a Bible on a holster on his belt and would just pop it out every once in a while.
Whoa, what the hell, wow.
But the best part of that job was, one, you got to eat. It was very prole. You could eat at the end of the day, but you could only get things with the star, and they were like nothing. But I was like 17.
No crab legs?
No crab legs. I was like 17, 18, and they had chicken tenders. So I would eat like my metabolism. I was fit and strong and shit like that. I would eat like 15 chicken tenders at the end of the day. Yeah. That was awesome. And the other thing that was great about it was they had us wear sailor outfits. And this happened to me more often. This happened to me multiple times. But one of the best interactions, like people would always think that you were in the Navy when you left work. Just insane. It's not what a Navy. We'd look like we were
Fred Flintstones.
You know what I mean? Like yeah. That's not what the Navy like uniform looks like. And also, there's no Navy base around there, so why would I be in my Navy outfit, right? But I remember one time this guy walks up to me and he goes, "I just want to thank you very much, son, for your service." And then it's like, "No, no, man, you got it all wrong. I don't do anything." And he's like, "No, man, you're being too humble." It's like, "No, man, I just serve food." He's like, "No. I paid for your gas." It's like, "Please don't pay for my gas." It's like, I already did. I paid inside. It's like, God damn.
You just got to thank him at that point. So
that was the one perk.
There's that thing where people in first class, like if somebody from the military comes in, they give up their first class seat. Like that's a thing. You should have wore your uniform on every flight you go on. Trying to squeeze out that first class.
Stolen. I literally had a name tag on.
Yeah, you might have name tags, out on the seas.
Yeah,
yeah, not like that.
Oh my god, that's amazing.
MDR says, "I was also a Mick employee. What could you share your worst McCarson?" One I've said before, which is like, it sticks out in my memory because it was completely natural reaction. I was one of two grill guys in the back. One was going to be sent home. The other was going to have to close. I wanted to be sent home. I wanted to go out and do something that night. And the other girl guy would have been okay with that. Instead, my manager comes back, looks at both of us, flips a coin, tells us to call it, and the other guy calls it and he sends him home. And my temple, like I thought I was having a heart attack or something. Like I could feel just like the blood pull. I could have taken my own pulse just by feeling it on my temple at that moment. And like, the sort of arbitrariness of manager decisions really hit me that day.
Oh yeah. We could do like, honestly, I would listen to like a podcast or a show with people just talking about their worst jobs because like there's so much, not to keep going on, but I like this, whatever, this is the last one that I'll say or whatever. But when I lived in Miami, I worked at we were talking about Native American casinos earlier. Mm-hmm. I worked at one basically overnight. I was like a poker dealer basically for these, you know, basically like super low stakes poker games. And the road that you have, people know about this road. It's a kind of an infamous road in Miami that you have to travel is like one of the most dangerous places like in the country, basically going down this road because it's very narrow. There's like swamp on either side filled with God knows what. And then just like trucks, like big rig trucks, like going by your car, like pushing you to the side. And I would have to do that at the middle of the night, like, you know, to go to this Native American casino. So insane. But yeah, there's like, and probably I could probably write a book about like all the stories working at that casino, but it's like, yeah, it's ridiculous.
That's wild, man. That's absolutely wild.
Yeah, it's crazy.
We should do that sometime.
Street Fight Radio, I believe, did a little bit of that.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
All right, y'all, we're going to do rapid fire for the last couples. Our congressional baseball fan says Tarantino films are so prevalent in society they can serve as shorthand in conversations. If you know anyone spouting off anti-Semitism, a great way to end that is to just say, "Hey, you know the ending of Inglourious Basterds." Dave from Jamaica says self-driving is more like constant babysitting. And Glass Onion did one thing very well, The movie was basically Elon is stupid, which is true.
Have you guys watched that movie? I've only seen like right wingers talking about like Ben Shapiro's like, it's the worst movie ever made. Like, that's all I'm saying.
I thought it was pretty entertaining.
It was fine. Yeah. It wasn't. I didn't think it was good.
It's a popcorn movie. It's like, oh, good. There's something to watch on Netflix.
I like that. I like Knives Out.
It wasn't as good as Knives Out.
I just didn't think this one hit as well. But like, if I had to pick between something that I like marginal and like one that was just like encouraging people to hate Elon Musk, I'll take that bet. And Joe Snuffy says it would be a dream to come on the show. And Rhode Island has 38 municipalities and a ridiculous number of people in our state legislature. Each municipality, of course, has its own police force, fire department, and other city services, despite the fact that the state is so small that there are 3 fire stations from different municipalities all within a mile of each other. Unlike most states where you have a single party machine that maintains control with an iron fist, here it's a constant bloodbath between conservatives, neo-libs, libs, and other shitty folks, and that infighting combines with huge number of seats to create openings for the left to win some power. Well, that's good. Our friend Dylan, I was just trying to pull this up, our friend Dylan from Australia, I Am of the Night, says, y'all should check out this video in your spare time. I think it does a very good job summarizing summarizing how the railroads got where they are. It's the video from the Wendover Productions, the one tiny law that keeps Amtrak terrible. I'll put it in the chat for everybody. Folks, I appreciate everyone so much. Arm Round, thank you so much for hanging out with us and joining us for this LR100 post game.
I love you guys' show. I've been watching and listening to all the shows. So yeah, it's an honor to be on such a good show.
Excellent, my brother. Well, everybody take care. We'll be back with this Rosa Luxemburg reading series this weekend. Don't forget to come visit us in New York City at the Cutting Room, January 22nd. It's going to be a hell of a lot of fun. And until then, everyone take care.
See you, folks. Thanks, RM.
Bye.